Amen. This is the Afterburn. If you have comments or questions, you go ahead and raise your hand. Steve will come around with the mic. If you're on a live stream, Rob will take care of that with Kurt, and they'll mark down the things from live stream. Please keep the comments and questions and et cetera to what we talked about today, all right, so that we have at least our focus on the teaching today. I know we covered a lot of things, and so you are welcome to go ahead and get us started. Who would like to start us off? Okay, Amy?
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Okay, I had immediately some thoughts on these verses when you started talking. It's a little different than what you said, but if you could just tell me if my thinking is right, I'd appreciate it.
Okay.
So I was thinking where it says, to establish my footsteps by your word, that if I'm walking in the ways that he teaches, right, then hopefully no wickedness will rule over me. Immediately made me think of Cain, right, in Genesis 4:7. Where Cain was angry, and Yahweh said, is it not, if you do good, you are to be accepted, and if you do not do good, towards the door is a sin. He is lying, and towards you is his desire, and you must rule over him. So I was thinking of how the wickedness could have rule over us, and that does tie in to the whole thing with the emotions that you went through so well. Then I also thought about 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, where it says, no trial has overtaken you except such as is common to man, and Elohim is trustworthy, who shall not allow you to be tried beyond what you are able, but with the trial shall also make the way of escape, enabling you to bear it. And I was wondering if the way of escape is repentance, if our footsteps are established by his word. Right? Wickedness can't rule over us if we're established and we repent. That be an okay way to think about that as well?
Yeah, that would. But I think, I mean, obviously there's going to be more in terms of a way of escape is going to take action. Okay, so, but you repent and then he might not give you the path to the escape until you repent, though. That's the first step of that. Okay, so, yeah, well said, well put. The Cain and Abel thing is a great example, because he was ruled by his emotional response to the fact that he was disappointing the Creator, when he could have had a totally different response to his disappointing the Creator, which would have been to repent, as you pointed out, and then make right action, which is, he said, if you do it right, won't I also be pleased with you? He could have then done it right, and Yahweh would have been pleased with him too. But he allowed the emotion to rule, all right? He got angry. He was embarrassed. He felt ashamed. All these negative things. It's terrible, okay? All right, who's next? Okay, Olivier?
So on the same idea, the wickedness rule over us. When you explained it and you made the analogy that, you know, we lose control, we become slave, and it rules over us, to me, I click with idolatry. Is it similar? Would he feel like we're doing idolatry when we're just focusing on that, when we let things rule over us?
Well, it's if you look at idolatry as putting anything in between the relationship of submission between you and him, okay, which means that something is in his place to a certain degree because you're submitting to something else, then in that case it would be true. Okay, so when you're being led or your emotions are pulling you in a direction and you end up not establishing your footsteps correctly, etc., now you're going off and doing something else. That sovereignty is now not him. And if it's not him, it's idolatry. So I would agree.
Yes, we are. Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay, Janet?
So thankful for your teaching. It was wonderful as usual. Thank you. My question is about the emotions. Since we were created according to his image, two questions: as Elohim has emotions, and what is the role of the emotions in our lives?
Well, again, the emotions are, there's nothing wrong with your emotions, okay? Emotions are very healthy. The emotions can be responses to either A, give you a confirmation that you're heading in a right direction. Emotions can also be a good warning you're going in a wrong direction. Okay? Having a proper concern and fear for something will help you maybe avoid something that can go badly. having a proper emotional feeling of joy and peace and love may have you going in a right direction. All right? Okay? I mean, I'll give you an example from the good side of it. I mean, the bad side of it is like, okay, you're supposed to be afraid of not touching a hot stove. Well, it's not a fear like, but it's like, I recognize that I could hurt myself with that, so I'm going to show proper respect and safety concerns because I know that I don't desire the feeling of burning myself. So it's an emotion, though, that then turns, when you have it, your footsteps established, it turns into just a logic. The emotion part is greatly diminished. So it's not like when I walk by a hot stove, I have an emotional reaction. I have an intellectual reaction that says, that may be hot, I need to be careful. Okay? All right? And so, on the other side of it, the same thing with the joy and the positive feelings, quote unquote. I may be just speaking for myself, but many of you probably, when you were younger, used to go out and we would call it partying. And we convinced ourselves that this was fun. We were having a good time. That's an emotional kind of language there, right? I'm enjoying myself. I was having a good time. Yet that good time often left you with adverse consequences. You would have, you know, hangovers and other adverse things that would happen after your good time. See, so now you were driven by an emotion but not allowing the logic to tell you this is the wrong way to get that feeling. Then I started hanging out when I became Torah observant. I started hanging out with my Torah observant friends, and we would go out and have a good time. And when I would come home, all I felt was that I had a good time. There was no hangover. There was no negative thoughts. There were no regrets and recriminations to go, what did I do? I don't even remember what I did. How did I get here? I mean, but this is all from an emotionally driven thing, right? And so if we have the emotions where we are controlling them, saying, okay, I'm seeking pleasure. Absolutely, that's an emotion. That's a good emotion. We should desire and seek pleasure. He made us to seek pleasure. But we can seek pleasure in a healthy way. We can seek pleasure in an unhealthy way. All right? We could have, you know, our strong emotions in a right way, whether positive or negative, or in a wrong way, positive or negative. So it's a matter of, again, being outside yourself, observing the outcomes I'm looking for. Okay? So if my outcome is to feel pleasure without recrimination, regret, shame, and anything else, then I'll make choices that lead to pleasure without those other negative outcomes. Okay?
If you allow me. Mm-hmm. Quick questions?
Yep.
All right. Verse 132 from Psalm 119. When it says, turn to me and show me favor to those, you know, those who love your name. Is it okay to pray like that? Like if you ask Yahweh to show you favor? If you
Absolutely.
Know that? Okay. And then the last one is...
Look, if you've been... It's kind of like... Let's go back to the grace teaching, okay? One of the things in the grace teaching, I go to like, you know... Jacob and Esau. And when Jacob is sending gifts to his brother, and he says to his brother, basically, if I have found favor in your eyes, in other words, if I've ever done anything that was pleasing to you, don't kill me. All right? I mean, look, and he knows he had moments where he did great things for his brother, and he used to make him stew and feed him and all that, because his brother loved all that stuff. Yeah, he had his one bad moment where, you know, the brother's all mad because he stole his birthright or whatever. But he said, it wasn't always that one thing. We were good brothers at one point. So when you're praying to Abba and you know you're making an effort and you're struggling in one area here or there, and you can say, Father, show me favor in the situation that I need favor in, because if I've done anything pleasing, if I'm making an effort, could you show me some favor in this thing that I need favor in right now? He's not obligated to say sure, because maybe that's not the thing you really need right now. But you can ask and say, hey, you know, you're not saying, hey, well, I did all this, you know, now you owe me. No, it's more like saying, hey, if I've done anything pleasing, I've been making the effort, I could really appreciate some favor in this situation right here. Okay?
Thank you, Rabbi.
You're welcome.
My last question is the portion that you read on 1 Corinthians about love. When you say, you know, Yeshua said, if you love me, you know, follow my commands. So is that okay to say, if you love me, be patient, be kind, you know, do not envy, do not boast, and all that?
Right, but just remember that. Don't use 1 Corinthians 13 to measure anybody but yourself. Don't look at your spouse and say, if you love me, you need to be more patient and this and that and this and that and this and that. Okay? Only measure yourself against those, what I do, from verse 4 to 7, so 4 verses there, okay? Don't measure other people that way. They will fall short, so will you, but don't measure them. Because then you'll be like, well, you say you love me, but you're not kind and this and that and blah, blah, blah. Don't do that, okay? Paul was talking to you to look at yourself. All right, who's next? Okay, Mike?
Well, if I might do a little expose of myself, I don't know who else in this room could relate. I was brought up by a Marine Corps father who demanded discipline. I mean, he, in my life, okay? And I mean, you know, bounced a quarter off the bed thing, you know, 50-cent haircuts every weekend, the whole smear, but it was mainly, you know, respect for authority and discipline, okay? And I brought up, you know, my two oldest daughters, what you had said earlier, Matula's daughters, I remember one occasion or a couple of occasions where I would be correcting them verbally, and I would hear that voice, you know, that's exactly what I'm dealing with you about, you know. But my question is, in light of all that, because there's a lot of these kids out there rioting and stuff like that that need to have a real good butt whipping, you know. But my question is, how do you bring in spare the rod and spoil the child, and don't be afraid if you bruise them? I'm not justifying bruising a child, okay?
No, I understand. Okay, so really good question. It'll be a big part of what I talk about when I do run the classes. I think we have to start to recognize that culturally, societally, generationally, things do change. And what I mean is that not the same things that worked for one generation work for a different generation or a different culture. And so it's really about, when we look at our children, we have to recognize, is this approach, tactic, okay, from a military point of view, I guess tactic, is this approach actually going to yield the outcome that I'm looking for, okay? I know I sound very red. That's because I'm very red, right? But I mean, but that's, you have to embrace that part of your personality when you're trying to figure these things out. What I'm talking about is you have to be thinking about results and outcomes, okay? The red personality is all I'm concerned about is it going to accomplish what I'm wanting to accomplish? I'm not really that concerned about how we get there as long as it works, okay? Where the blue side, we'd be much more concerned about how we get there because it's a right way and a wrong way. But see, if I go to, you know, and again, my children, when they were little, I would give them a swat every now and then. I stopped it at a point pretty early on when I realized it wasn't doing anything, okay? So if it's not doing anything, then there's no point to use that tactic. I needed to find a different tactic, all right? Some of you may do really well taking away the electronics or some other thing, and for some of your children, they were like, I don't care, and it doesn't do anything. So you have to find the approach that works with your children. There's no longer the idea that somehow one size fits all. If giving them a swat has no effect, there's no point in doing it. Now, of course, if you're doing it out of anger, that's why you're doing it. You're doing it to vent your anger. That's wrong. But if you're doing it to get a result and it's not getting the result, see, why is the rioting happening over and over again right now? Because there is no consequence. Nobody's getting arrested, so nobody has any reason to stop. You know, I mean, as soon as this last thing happened in Philadelphia, everybody ran out and just started opening up stores and walking out. Because after all, this unfair, in their opinion, I don't know what, I mean, I'm not taking a side, right? But this unfair event between police and another person is justification to take big screen TVs and gym shoes and other things out of a store? What does that have to do with anything? Okay? But there's nobody there stopping them. So guess what? They're not going to stop. Well, let's take the same thing to your children. I can punish them in lots of different ways. If it doesn't then get them to change their behavior in the way I'm hoping, then I might as well do something different. The thing I'm doing, why do I keep doing it and not getting, look, crazy is doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. If I keep doing it and it's not getting the result I want, why do I keep doing it? So as far as, you know, corporal punishment, where you go ahead and maybe spank a child, If it works, it may work with one child, it may not with another. But it needs to be under control. It's not to cause pain, it's more to cause shame and embarrassment because they don't like that they're getting hit and that mom's upset or dad's upset. But if it doesn't work, then what's the point? Well, I've tried everything. I smacked my this. Well, then try something else. Don't do that anymore. It doesn't work. Okay? So now the kids are thinking, wow, all I got to do is just keep doing what I'm doing. After they smack me, they'll realize it doesn't work. No. How about realizing you're just frustrating your parents who are trying to help you understand something you're too dense and dumb and inexperienced and too young to understand? Well, you think you know everything because you're a teenager. Because some things in life you just can't understand because you don't. It's not because of just age or the fact that you're less educated. It has to do with life. You haven't experienced and seen things that we have. So you can't know because you've not been there. You've not been through it. And we have, and we're trying to save you the grief and give you the advantages that nobody gave us because they didn't know to tell us instead. Okay? All right, so really it's about, with the parenting, is about figuring out, you know, what needs to be done. Look, I can't tell you this enough. When your children become teenagers, man, you have got to have made the transition. But nowadays, I wouldn't even say 16, 17, I mean by like 14, 13, 14, you got to make the transition to where they and you have a relationship where they will at least hear what you have to say and process it. And you got to recognize that they're in that growth place of trying to get sovereignty over themselves. And the more that you try to just put them back into those 7-year-old and 8-year-old shoes, it's just not going to work. Give them things where they have some sovereignty. Make sure that they trust you enough to share everything with you. But they got to feel safe. My children know that there may be consequences, but it's safe. And they'll know, and they know when they deserve consequences, so they're not surprised, but they're balanced and they're fair and reasonable to what happened, okay? And there's not always consequences, by the way. In other words, if they are genuine in my conversation with them and they really own and are convincing me that they own it, then the lesson was learned. I don't need to do more to them. Why do I need to punish them when they already are feeling awful and they figured it out? But see, is it crocodile tears or is it genuine? Do you have enough relationship where they're being honest with you? That's the hard part. Because you'll have to hear a whole bunch of stuff you do not want to hear. I'm not saying that about my kids. I'm just saying in general. Okay? To truly do what I'm asking you to do, you have to be willing to hear stuff you do not want to hear. You'll have to hear about their struggles with gender, their struggles with relationships, their struggles with pornography or drugs, or you'll have to hear whatever it is with cutting themselves in depression. You're going to have to hear a whole bunch of really hard to hear things. And you're going to be in denial saying, not my kid. Well, why not? Why couldn't it be your kid? You're going to have to hear them be atheist. You're going to have to hear them be, you know, whatever different politics in you. You're going to have to hear them be, I mean, whatever area of life, you're going to have to hear them do it opposite you in a way you're just like, why would they do that? But can you hear that and still have a relationship so that you have influence? Influence meaning that they respect you enough to consider you to allow you to influence what they're doing in a positive way. This is hard. All right? This is hard. But most of you, I don't think you have it in you at the moment. You're going to have to grow more before you can do this. When I say I'm not saying you don't think you have it in you. I just don't think you have it in you now. You're going to have to grow to the place where you can do this. You know? Look, Mike, even you, I had to tell you with your daughter. I said, did you raise her right? You said, yeah. I said, now you got to trust her, make her decisions. Okay? That was our first conversation. All right? You got to trust those children to make some decisions. That maybe they'll make good ones, maybe they'll make bad ones. But you got to, if you're not in that sort of that respected counselor position, then guess what? When they mess up, they're not coming to you. If they're getting all of their counsel from the sideways friends, that's a disaster. Okay? If all of their counsel is coming from 15-year-olds when they're 15 and they're not coming to you, that's just the blind leading the blind. So how do you get them to come to you? You got to earn that. Okay? You got to spend hours and earn that. All right, Christine. Actually, you and I had this conversation yesterday.
I was just wondering if you could go back to one of your comments you mentioned and clarify where, you know, you said that you had swatted the children and it wasn't working and you had to figure out something else to do. Maybe just clarify that that something else doesn't mean hit harder or get a tool.
It means a completely different approach. Yeah. Yeah, no. No, do something else doesn't mean find a different part of the body to hit or hit them with a different device. It means that the spanking just wasn't working. Come up with a totally different approach. It doesn't mean, well, if three swats didn't work, five will work better. It's just, it's either going to be something that causes them to have a proper fear reaction, saying, I don't want that to happen again, so I'm not going to do this. Because that's all you're looking for, is them to have something that says, I didn't like the consequence, I'm going to pay better attention now. But if it doesn't get that result, then you didn't pick the right vehicle to do that with. And so, no, I'm talking about doing something completely different. Wait, Christine has her hand back up. Give it back to her.
Thank you. Going back to the concept of in parenting and such, where you have to look inside at your own self. Mm-hmm. And this kind of goes along with what we're talking about, because growing up, my dad and my brother had an awful relationship because my dad was very physical toward him. And he was ADD or ADHD and ODD. But if my dad had stopped and said, okay, I need to get help to figure out how to help this child instead of beating him.
Yeah.
That's where parents perhaps might need to say, wait a minute, let me get counsel. And that's what Rabbi and our family is here for.
Amen. Okay, well said. Let me launch off of that something that's, I think, very important. You know, I used to tell the children that when they took certain tests, okay, they would take, like, Tennessee had their standardized tests. You know, a lot of states have standardized tests that the different grades have to take. I said, just realize that they're testing not just the students, but the teachers. They're trying to get an assessment of how well the teachers are teaching the subject. So, like, for example, if you are the teacher of a history class, math class, English, it doesn't matter. If you are a teacher of a class and you give an exam to the class and everybody in the class gets around a 70, is it the class that's having a problem or you as the teacher? Okay? Now, if you get the normal bell curve of grades, then you figure that's kind of the normal way it works in the bell curve. But if you get instead almost nobody getting a decent grade, then you have to wonder, did you teach it well? Okay? So the same thing with parenting. If your children are doing whatever they're doing, your first question you should ask is, what did I do to empower, enable, support, cause, or whatever, if anything, that the child is doing? Don't just look at the child. Okay? First, you should be asking yourself, is there something about my approach? See, if I'm not getting the result I want with my kids, I want to figure out what I'm doing to find the right approach to get the result. But also, I think that we're now finally, hopefully, generationally to a point where we should not be ashamed and afraid to get diagnosed. And then if we have children that are diagnosed, or if we ourselves are diagnosed, we should learn how to adjust to those things. If you've got an ODD child, that's opposition defiant, okay? That's what that means. So that means that pretty much whatever you want, they're going to do the opposite, and you're not going to get your way on anything. And that's not just like normal rebellious teenagers. I'm talking about, it's an actual syndrome that's literally impossible for the person to give you what you want when they're in that ODD place. Okay, so it's opposition defiance disorder. If you know that, then you have to deal with that child in a certain way. It's not just them being a rude, obnoxious, rebellious kid. It just depends on what's really going on there. All right? Because I dealt with somebody with ODD one time. And I didn't really understand how serious and how real that was. And the person insisted that they didn't have it. Basically said, all the stuff that they diagnosed me with, I don't have. So I said, fine. I said, let me just ask you a question. I said, do you have ODD? Well, I don't believe in that stuff, and I don't believe in that. I said, no. Just yes or no. That's all I want. See, now I've communicated what I want, which means he can't do it. I just want a yes or no? Do you believe that you have ODD? Blah, 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 blah. I asked like five different times, six, seven, eight times. I said, and all he did was prove that he had it. I said, no, I get all that. I said, I just want you to answer the question, just with a yes or a no. I heard all that stuff before. Do you, and if you don't, just say no. Do you have, and he still couldn't do it. It's that challenging a syndrome, okay? And but obviously, in Christine's case with her brother, she had a father in this situation, just had no idea how to deal with that, took it as rebellion, took it as whatever he took it as defiance, as a challenge to his authority, and ended up beating the snot out of him for that, whatever it was. And that's awful. See, you have to know that all of your children are handicapped. So are you, by the way. And some of those handicaps don't do well together. They clash badly, especially you and your spouse, too, both handicapped. We're all handicapped. None of us is balanced in every area of our life. That is what it means to be a handicap, which means there's a part of your life that is not functioning as well as it should. And by the way, if you're really, really good at anything, it means you're not going to be really good at something else. There's a balance there. Nobody's just really good at everything, okay? The more things you're really good at, the more things you're not really good at. There's a balance. It's just the way we're created, with that balance. And so you have to know your child and know what they're, you know, what may feel like just rebellious this or that or whatever may not be all of that stuff. Sit down, figure out that kid. Make sure that the child knows you love them and they love you, and that so you always maintain that bond while you're trying to figure each other out and what your challenges are. Where is the handicap? Because we're all, every one of us, handicapped. Just don't even argue that point. Okay? Not a single one of you is functionally perfectly happily in your life. And the reason is because you have a handicap somewhere. Okay? Period. Problem is, you used to be stigmatized to go find out what you have. Don't. Go find out. Go get your children tested. Get you tested. Find out what you have. They're going to want to put you on drugs and this, that. You don't have to do what they tell you. At least find out the diagnosis. I mean, I don't mind going to the doctor if I think I have the flu and the doctor says, by the way, you have the flu. Now, I could decide how I want to treat it. I might want to do some vitamin C and some other things to deal with my stuff. I may want to take some medicine. I may want to do NyQuil. I may want to, whatever I'm going to do. My choice. At least I found out what I have. Okay? My son had bad earaches on a regular basis when he was little. We thought he might have an ear infection. We brought him to the doctor. The doctor said he didn't have an ear infection. But at least I found out that he didn't have one, but he had ear pain. So we had to figure out what to do for that. But we went and got it examined to find out, is it this or is it that? Well, guess what? You have children that may be just off the spectrum with autism, with ODD, with ADHD, with whatever, depression, with manic depression, with bipolar. There could be all kinds of things they're dealing with on some mild levels. See, we only think of the ones with extreme levels because those are the ones that when you see them, they're obviously off in some way. In other words, it's very obvious that there's something that is out of kilter. The rest of us, it's not so obvious until we interact on a more regular basis that there's something out of whack. Okay? And so, but we struggle because of it. All right, Tamara?
Okay, I made some notes so that I could stay focused. So my ADD didn't kick in. Okay, so some of you know that I'm in nursing school. I'm in my third semester. This semester, I am in mental health. So I've been spending some time with some...
That's where most of you end up going after graduating.
Yeah, I know. So I've had a wonderful experience. Some of you know, after you've been around me, that my childhood for the first 18, 19 years is like a Lifetime movie. I mean, I could make a series. Some of the stories I tell you, I can tell you get secondhand embarrassment because it's kind of crazy, and it really is. But once we got into Torah, something happened, something changed. I stopped being so emotional. I stopped feeling like, why me? Why did that happen? And now my focus is like clinging to Torah and knowing that there was nothing that I did wrong. And that took years to accept, but I just felt like I should share that with someone. It can happen. So I've been working with some children who are in a group home, and the stories are just crazy. Mm-hmm. There's a child that I spent time with the last couple weeks that absolutely stole my heart. And he was committed to this group home on false statements from his mother. Basically, his stepfather was abusing him and was, well, physically abusing him to the point that she had to choose between him and the stepfather. She had to make a decision according to the state of whether she would keep custody of him or lose custody. And I was there to help deliver the news that he would no longer be going back home to mama. This was hard, but we spent a really good day together because I was that child. I remember what that felt like. So I'm saying this because I took my past, I took my experiences, and Abba has allowed me to be that light to these children, to be there, because I don't want to be a victim. I don't want to be stuck. I don't want to be blaming everybody that hurt me. Because if I'm stuck there, who's going to be there? Who's going to help the other people that I'm there to be with?
Amen.
So yeah. I just wanted to throw that in and hopefully, you know, just encourage you or anyone. It sucks. It does suck. But you don't know. Because now I know my focus for nursing. I hope I will work in a group home. I hope that that's where Abba will put me, because I could totally see me making a difference and being there for children who need a voice.
Amen. Amen. All right, I want to connect the dot that goes between what Tamara said, okay, and who talked about the way of escape? Okay, Amy did. I knew it was on this side. Okay, so think about it. When it says that Abba says he will provide a way of escape, maybe the way of escape is not so much the way of escape, but someone who already knows the path, okay, because they've already been down that path. And see, if you don't go down the path, then how can you help someone else go down the path? And so why did he allow you to go through it? Because someone else is going to need you to guide them through the path. Okay? Does it make sense? All right. All right, where's the mic? Live stream?
From Francis Clayton, says, thank you, Rabbi. When discerning problems, how does one go about overcoming issues such as submission, selfishness, pride, arrogance? Is it a continual casting down, repenting of the thought, sin?
Okay, one more time, just so I can process that completely.
Okay, so when discerning problems, how does one go about overcoming issues such as submission, selfishness, pride, arrogance? Is it continual casting down, or of the thought, or of the sin?
Okay. This is, again, now we're going to have to deal with our indoctrination or whatever it is that Christianity did to us, okay? Don't think that it's something that just needs to be rebuked, cast down. If you just say the right words to the thought, it'll go away. All right? Use the process I was talking about, which is own it so you understand what you're doing. Start to be more hyper aware so you can catch yourself when you start doing it. Get a new and practiced way of responding. So if you're having a, read me some of the adjectives that were in this. Okay, you had pride. What were the descriptive words in there, Rob? If you're dealing with pride, if you're dealing with?
Submission. Selfishness, pride, arrogance.
Okay, pride, arrogance, submission, selfishness. So you should know what that looks like when you're doing it. Because if I say selfishness, that may manifest very differently from one person to the next. If I say pride, it may manifest very differently from one person to the next, okay? So you know what it looks like in you. And when you start to see it coming, you should now have practice, use the visualization technique and things like that, to practice when that's happening, what should I do different? And it's not rebuking it, okay? We have this tendency to think of all negative emotional things as being outside entity demons. So therefore, if I rebuke it, it will go away because it's an it. No, it's you. Okay? You just need to control that emotion, which is now out of balance. You're having simply an out of balance problem. Okay? It's nothing wrong with thinking about yourself, but when you're out of balance, you're selfish. Okay? There's nothing wrong with being proud at a certain point, but there's a point where you turn into being prideful. It's an out of balance problem. Okay? When you struggle with submission, you don't always struggle with submission, but there are certain circumstances under which you struggle with submission. So where's the balance problem? So in that balance, you're way too much on your own throne instead of letting the other person be on the throne. And so that's a balance problem. So recognize that, and most of you should probably agree easily to this, we tend to have the same things generally happen over and over again. In type and form, at least, if not literally the same. And so you know what it's like in your life when you're having these issues. You know what they tend to look like, what they tend to sound like, what the experience tends to be like. So then you can now take that and say, okay, when these types of things happen, I need a new strategy, kind of like we're trying to figure out how to discipline a child. I need a new strategy in my way of responding and dealing with things where in those situations I normally would act prideful or selfish or whatever it is, arrogant, having a submission problem. Under those certain, so what's my new strategy for that? Okay, I'll give you an example in my own life. I was really bad in terms of, I guess selfish would be the word, my stuff was my stuff. I didn't let you borrow my stuff, you couldn't play with my stuff, and God forbid you should damage my stuff, you were in big trouble. Okay? To fix that problem, I actually had to swing the pendulum all the other way, and I just started always giving away my stuff. That was the only way I could try to figure out how to fix it, was to get so disconnected from the stuff that I was like, here, you can just have it. And I just started giving away my stuff. Okay? I still struggle from time to time. But I had to take that and recognize that it's an out-of-balance problem, so I had to swing the pendulum the other way to kind of find the middle. Okay? So I turned around and just started giving my stuff away. I tell the story about how I had a shofar, very much like this one. It was similar to that. That was my shofar. And I was going around traveling and speaking, and I had shofars with me that I was selling as well, just to kind of, you know, finance what I was doing. And a lady said that they needed one for their congregation. I said, sure, I've got three or four left in the car. Let me go get you one to pick from. And she said, no, I want that one. I said, well, that one's mine. She goes, yeah, I know, and we want a great one. That's a great one. We want that one. Now, that's my brain. See, I did exactly what I'm trying to get you to do. I caught myself going right into selfish mode where that's mine. Can't have it. It's mine. And then the thought said, wait a minute. Are you in ministry or you're not? Are you in ministry? She needs that. She wants that for her congregation. So why can't she have it? You get another one. But I had to have this conversation in my head. I had to catch myself in an awareness that I was going back into a place I didn't want to be. Now, I certainly could have still, in my own right, said, well, that's okay, I appreciate that, but this one's mine, I'm keeping it. But I wasn't feeling that. I was feeling the old thought, which made me need to sell it and get, you know, let her have it. I needed to do that. If it was simply, you know what, I think I'd like to keep this one for me because it's my horn, right? So that's a different sort of place. I knew I was falling back. So, but it starts with that hyper-awareness. I actually was seeing myself feeling the way I was feeling. I caught myself as she was talking to me going, she wants my shofar. By the way, she also wanted a leather-bound scriptures. I only had one. It had my name in it. Like little stickers for the name. So it wasn't written in it, but it had little stickers for the name. And I said, well, I only have one. I my own. It's got my name in it. She said, I'll take it. I don't mind. I can cover up the stickers. put a label over it. So, she got my horn and my show and my scriptures. And so I'm still just using this paper one that I've been using for 20 years. It's fallen apart, you know. And the leather one had been a gift, too. It wasn't even like I bought it. I mean, it's $125 scriptures. That's what they, you know, they still run about the same, okay? You know. As a matter of fact, Julie and I both have them. She still has hers. She's like, yeah, that's mine. She's the one who, by the way, you could probably guess who put the stickers with my name on it in mine, okay? It wasn't me. Now, legitimately, I never used it. I always used this paper one. This is the one I always worked with. I kept the leather one always at home, just on a shelf, in case one day I would ever use it for something. I don't know. I just liked that it was a nice quality scripture. So I never used it anyway. I always used this one. And one day when this falls apart, I'll finally use something else. Of course, she's already told me I can't have hers. I asked her already, so. I said, when this falls apart, can I have yours? Because you use the newer version. I like the old version. She said, nope, that's mine. I said, and I don't, that's not being selfish, by the way. That's hers. And it was meant as a gift for her, and she should have it. So I don't think she's being selfish. I had the problem. Because she's very generous. She doesn't have the same problem I had. I had the problem. And so the person who's asked that question, you got to recognize you situationally, what the situations cause you generally to fall into, arrogance, pride, selfishness, submission, whatever the issue was that you listed on there, they don't just happen randomly. They happen under the same circumstances over and over again. So come up with a strategy. If you don't know how to do that, call me and we'll talk about it. I'll help you come up with a strategy, okay? You'll still come up with a strategy. I'll just help you think through the process. Because you have to figure out what works for you, okay? But I'm professional enough to know how to get you to work through the process. I've had enough experience doing this. All right, who's next?
Okay, from Nakia Andrews. So it's from 1 Corinthians 13, the quote-unquote love chapter. What exactly does it mean to reckon the evil in verse 5?
Okay, does not behave indecently, does not seek its own, is not provoked, reckons not the evil, does not rejoice. Okay. I'm going to guess that reckons not the evil really has to do with doesn't have the emotional response. Again, this is the idea of owning it or taking it as being something personal so that you're going to have this non-loving response. Because remember, these are all adverse things that are happening that the person is handling in a loving way. So I'm going to interpret that phraseology to have to do with doesn't look at it and take it personally and then get a negative emotional response. Is going to be patient and cover it and everything else like that. All right, is that good for everybody? Does it make sense? All right, next.
Okay, from Justin Rodriguez, says, Rabbi, question, how as a husband can we walk out Torah trying to be a bride to Messiah when we struggle so much as a man and a husband alone? How can we know we are still moving forward in this walk?
I think, never mind. I was going to be a wise guy. I'm not going to do that. just quit. It ain't going to work. Okay. No, look, we have a very hard challenge. Ladies, I think, have it a little bit easier. Because guys, you got to figure out how to be a husband and how to be a bride. You got to do both things. All right? And we're not very good at either of them. Ladies, you're just not very good at one thing. Guys, we're not good at two things. Okay. Ladies are like, thanks, I feel a lot better now. But you got to understand that actually the ladies have the same problem. Okay? Everybody's in the middle. Okay, ladies, you end up with responsibility for, if you have children, for children, if you have other situations where you have, at some point you have those you're responsible for on some level, okay? And so you have to learn how to provide and protect and be the above covering, and you have to learn how to be submissive and follow to the one above you. And so you're in a quote-unquote husband role when you're above somebody else. What's the husband role? Provide and protect. What does mothers do for their children? Provide and protect. Okay? But then also you have the bride or the wife role. Submission, support, encouragement to the above. Guys, we got to do the same thing. That's why you need to get underneath somebody as a covering so that you can be the encourager and believe in and follow and submit to that authority. So you can practice doing the bride role. So really the role has to do with where you are in the structure. Does that make sense? It's simply a matter of where you are in the structure. Okay? Women need exactly what the man needs from their children. They need from their children what the man needs from their wives. Obedience, trust, submission, right? Encouragement, whatever. Respect. Oh, does a mom not like it when that child disrespects her? But respect's a man thing, if you understand what I'm saying. It's a critical piece of the man, the need for respect. But it really has nothing to do with the man or the woman. It has to do with where you are in the structure. The above needs respect. The below needs love, nurturing, comfort, providing, protecting. So it's just a matter of where you are in the structure, which one you need. Okay? So women, you need to understand this. Your husband needs respect. Why? Because he's above you in the structure. He needs encouragement. He needs you to support and believe in him. And then ladies, you should be receiving from the man the covering, the protection, the safety, the provision, so that your needs are met. Just like you take care of your children, their needs are met. Okay? But by the way, just like you don't give your children everything they want, your husband's not going to give you everything you want. Because just because you want it doesn't mean it's appropriate. Just like your child, just because they want it doesn't mean it's appropriate. Does that make sense, everyone? So really, it has more to do with where you are in the structure than your physical gender, okay? Okay, next.
Okay, from Marianne says, how can I actively choose to be happy? Are there some steps or actions that I can take?
No. Look, being happy starts off with only one simple thing. You have to recognize that it's a choice, okay? Once you realize it's a choice, then all you have to do is choose. But see, the reason that's not as simple as it sounds, let me ask you, what's the reason? What makes it so hard to choose to be happy? What is making that so hard? He said self, but no, it's more specific than that. Your negative emotional state that's ruling over you. Okay, we covered this, right? You could, if you were not ruled by an emotional state, you could respond to anything and be happy. Why can't you be happy? Because the other emotion was stronger and took over and is ruling over you. So it's not allowing you to make a choice. The happy emotion is handcuffed behind the back and can't do anything. Because the offended, angry emotion is ruling. Or the disappointed, upset one, whatever emotion. You understand, following this now? This goes right back to what we read in Psalm 119. That emotion ruling is making it the challenge in making the choice. So when you say, well, what is it I need to do so I can be happy and choose to be happy? Stop being ruled by everything else, and then the whole buffet of choices is available to you. You could be happy, sad, joyful, you know, melancholy. I mean, there's a wide variety of emotions available to you at every moment. And you get to pick whichever one it is. Look, I got this beautiful, huge calendar now on my wall where I can, like, marker board calendar. And you know what? I've got a jar full of colorful markers, and I get to walk over and choose, do I want, when I write Torah study every week, to be blue, red, yellow, pink? It doesn't matter. I can choose the color. I got them all sitting there. There's nothing forcing me to choose. Now, guess what? Once I've already put blue for certain things and green for certain things, I've now emotionally limited my choices to the next thing I do because I've already used a color. When really, I could still use the same color again. But I feel less able to do that because I've already used something else. I'm already using that color for something. Do you follow this? So the same thing with your emotions. If I'm already upset, and I'm fully in that mode of upset, and I'm already utilizing the upset feeling emotion, it's hard for me now to choose a different color, a different marker, so to speak, because I've already have the other one in my hand, I'm using it. I mean, that's why I went and got so many different colors, so I could have lots of choices, so I could do different things. What if I only had, you know, two colors or one color? So now everything's the same color. Guess what? If I mark my marker board up with all the same color, nothing will be easy for me to catch my eye when I'm looking for something. But if I know that Rosh Chodesh is red, when I put it on my calendar, I look at my calendar and the only thing red is Rosh Chodesh, my eyes are going to go right to it and I go, oh, wow, that's on Monday the 16th. I couldn't remember the date maybe, and there it is. Because I color-coded it, right? So if you don't have a wide spectrum with your emotions, then everything is anger. Everything's upset. Everything's depressed. Everything's anxiety. Because you've lost the ability to choose. You forgot you have these things in your, you know, box of crayons, so to speak, or box of markers. So the secret to all of this is first recognizing you have choice, and secondly, realizing that if you don't seem to be able to make the choice, the only problem is there's already a choice that's been made. But you're like, well, I didn't choose to be depressed. Yes, you did. It happened so quickly that you didn't realize that you even had volition in it, that you actually had a choice, because it was a triggered response. So now that time frame is so small, it can't even almost be measured between when something happened and you chose to get angry. Because you feel like, no, they made me angry. No, they didn't. They hurt my feelings. No, they didn't. Something happened and you chose your response. Your response was to feel hurt feelings or anger or depressed or disappointment. That was what you chose to feel. I remember back in martial arts, we had a guy, we called him Sarge. He was a military guy. I guess he was probably a sergeant, right? And he liked to fight. He liked getting hit. He didn't mind being hit at all. And so I was sparring with him. And, man, I got him with something really good. And he smiled at me like, that was good. Come on. Like, he liked it. But whatever it was, it just woke him up, gave him more focus. So he was like, oh, yeah, good shot, good. Now, instead of being, oh, I'm going to get you, you know. No, he's just like, oh, that's good, good. He chose a different response. Okay? He didn't feel embarrassed that I got a shot in on him. He didn't feel angry because I got a shot in on him. He looked at me like, that was good. Good. Here we go. Come on. Let's do it again. You can choose how you respond. All right? Problem is, you're so out of control, ruled by the emotion, that it happens so quickly that you don't know you have a choice. It was like autopilot. But you had a choice. All right? It's like you go to the restaurant and they bring out chocolate ice cream, they put it in front of you. You had no idea that there was 15 other flavors you could have picked because they just brought you out the chocolate one and there it's already there. Well, maybe you don't want chocolate. Maybe you want, you know, cookie dough or you want whatever. Okay? But you don't even know because they just brought you the one by default. There it is. It's got to start off with an awareness. All right, next question. Now, these are good questions because we struggle with this stuff. That's why I think that verse was so powerful. You know? I know I changed the word wickedness into emotional control and stuff, but I think that's really where it comes from. All right, go ahead.
Okay, from Philip Mason, 119, verse 130. The opening up of the Torah. Rabbi, is this literally, quote unquote, opening up, or Yahweh giving understanding, or is it both?
I think I covered that last part because I know we started in 132 today. I know I went back and covered 130 real briefly. I'm hoping I covered that last time. But the opening up of your words gives light. In other words, as he reveals and makes it, or when you get to the place where you're able to understand and see what the word is talking about, then you have enlightenment or light. You can see things more clearly, and this gives understanding to the simple. Okay? So in other words, when you are able to get to a place where you were able to receive it as a simple person might receive, without overthinking it, without overcomplicating it, and just being open to receive, then the opening up of the word can bring light.
Okay, from Helen Thrasher. So if you're having a heavy repeating pattern going through your mind about something that was done to you and afraid of repeating again, how can we stop the patterns in your mind about it? I think you may have covered that pretty good.
I did. Look, and we can counsel about it. What I've said often to you, the cure to almost all your problems is bringing reality into the situation. Okay, so what is the reality here that we're dealing with? Okay, so is the thing that you're struggling with that's repeatedly going on in your mind that you're worried about, is in reality any of that still happening or likely to be happening at this point? If it is, then things need to be done to mitigate that problem. If it isn't, then you have to remind yourself, This is not happening now. What I'm going through right now in my life, there's no situation that's actually like the one I'm all worried about. The people I'm dealing with now are different. They're not the people that hurt me last time. The situation is different. Where I'm living is whatever. Just keep bring reality into it. And that should help you to recognize that you're not where you were. Like I said, but if you are where you were, then you need to do what you need to do to get out of that place. But once you're out of that place, out of that situation, you do not like, you know, if a man or a woman did something to you, that doesn't mean all men and women now will do that thing to you. Okay? Because some of the men were really hurt badly by a woman. Some of the women were hurt really badly by a man. And now all of a sudden they think all men or all women will treat me that way. Recognize that you have had other experiences with men or women that weren't like that. Bring reality into it. Okay? Recognize that while your experience is common enough, in other words, if you're a woman and you've been physically abused or emotionally abused, that sadly is incredibly common. However, if you talk to the women, they'll also tell you that it's not everybody in their life that did that. It was one or two people. So to think that it's now everybody will continue to be this way is not right to do. And now you're going to be handicapped in your whole life thinking that all men will do this to me, all women will do this to me. When it was very specific ones who had very specific access to you in a very specific type of relationship that you now know is where the risk might come. Okay? But it wasn't all of this particular group. Does that make sense? Is that fair? Okay, that'll help a little bit, hopefully. In other words, see what's different instead of always thinking, well, this is the same, so I should feel the same. But what if it's not the same? Then you shouldn't feel the same. I mean, unless it's the same. I know that was a little bit dizzying, wasn't it?
Okay, a couple questions on Psalm 119, verse 133. Is it right to connect this to Ephesians 6:17? And having the helmet of deliverance and holding thoughts captive in the obedience of Messiah Yeshua.
Sure. You can connect that. Okay? I just don't want you to connect it in any way that takes away your responsibility and the power you have to fix this problem. Okay? Just understand that taking thoughts captivity is still your job. All right? Owning your emotional state is your job. You can ask him for help, but it's still your job. You have to demonstrate, before you get into the kingdom, you are going to have to show him that you are a stable person. Because you're not trustworthy if you're not stable. And he's not going to give you forever if you're not stable, emotionally. All that Hasatan and the demons have done is easily pointed to an emotional response to, a negative emotional response to what was going on in their lives. Okay? So if you cannot become emotionally stable, he's not going to give you the forever. You're going to have to spend the time you need to now, or possibly in the millennium, developing that stability. And by the way, you can do it. He wouldn't call you. Because I know some of you thinking, I can't do this. Listen, you can do it. Okay? He would not tease you with this. I don't care how emotionally screwed up you are right now. You can get that stabilized. Two things are necessary or you'll never get it. One, you have to believe it's possible. Okay? You have to believe it's possible. And two, you have to make the effort. That's all. Believe you can get there and do the work. If you don't believe, you're not going to get there. And if you don't do the work, you're not going to get there. The work of working on your emotional stability. I'm not just saying Torah observance. You have to work on your problem, whatever that is in terms of out of balance. So you got to believe that you can get there, and then you got to do the work. All right, next.
From Mrs. Wallstrom, says, in talking about submission to the husband, if the husband isn't on board yet with keeping Yah's command, Shabbat, food, etc., is a wife to bypass her husband's authority to obey Yah?
Say that one more time because I want to be careful with the answer here.
It says, in talking about submission to the husband, if the husband isn't on board yet with keeping Yah's commands, Shabbat, food, etc., is a wife to bypass her husband's authority to obey Yah?
Okay. So these are very common challenging issues when you're in an unequally yoked situation where you are not believing the same. Yoking is simply, it's a discipleship actually term for being under the same instruction, okay? So you're unequally yoked. All right, you have a relationship problem if you do not have a husband or a wife, whichever one of you is unequally, whichever one of you is not covenanted, if they're not going to respect your walk, you have a relationship problem that you need to figure out and work out. As far as obedience, okay, it's not a problem if you're the wife, okay? This is, we have two different situations. It's not a problem if you're the wife. If your husband wants to bring pork in the house, it's his house, okay? If he wants to put a Christmas tree in your house, it's his house. Now, if you don't want to have a relationship with a person that's going to do that, that may be a relationship problem with you and him. He can do these things. It's his house. You cannot usurp that. You don't have to participate in the Christmas stuff. You don't have to eat the pork. If he wants to watch the ball game on Saturday, you don't have to be in the room while he's watching the ball game on Saturday. Okay? You have every authority to say no if he wants you to go with him to the store and shop on Saturday. You have every authority to say no if he wants to go to some, you know, entertainment thing on Saturday. This is a relational stuff. So you don't allow your husband to usurp Yahweh, but it has to do with you, not him. You don't control the house. It's his house. Okay? I know that's hard for you ladies, but that's the reality. It's his house. In the vertical structure, he gets to make those decisions. So if he wants that in the house, it's in the house. He can even ask you to cook it for him. You don't have to cook it for him. This is your relationship. That's between you and him. Unless it's breaking Torah, you should do it. By meaning you breaking the Torah. Be submissive to your husband because that's also part of Torah. But yes, Yahweh comes before your husband. But if you're struggling with these things, you need to counsel and figure out how you're going to... You need to talk to your husband about, hey, listen, I know we're on different pages right now, but I'd like us to figure out how to be respectful of the fact that, you know, we need to dwell in the same house and in respect. And if you're really not happy about, say, the Christmas tree and other things, and he's insisting on doing it, you may have a problem that's not resolvable. You have to just work through with each other. That's, every situation is going to be individual. So don't you hear me say, well, my husband wouldn't take the Christmas tree out, so our thing is unresolvable. I didn't say that. I said, you may have a problem that's unresolved. You have to work these things through as best you can. Okay? Now, the flip side of this, which wasn't asked, but I have to cover both sides of it, is men, if you are the man and you are the house owner and it's your house, so to speak, and don't say, well, my wife paid for the house. You're the husband. In the vertical structure, you're at the top. She wants to bring the Christmas tree in. No. Well, then she'll divorce me. Well, maybe that will happen. She wants to bring the pork in. No. It's your house. You see the difference? The burden of responsibility. You need to figure that out. Now, if you want to allow these things or whatever, that's between you and her, that's okay. But I'm saying is you have the right to say, no, in this house, we're not bringing pork in this house. We're not bringing a Christmas tree in this house. It's a tougher situation. But Rabbi, you don't understand. I love when the people say that. Really, am I the one struggling to understand or are you? Are you the husband? Are you the man? Are you the provider? Is it your house? Whose house is it anyway? Some of you have never owned the house. I mean, I'm not even talking about the payments. I'm saying you've let the wife rule in your house. You have not had authority in your own house. You don't know how to do it. I get that. That's fine. Learn. Figure it out. I'm going to tell you right now, there are a lot of books out there you could get that will help you. All right. I listen to books on all of this stuff all the time. Listening to a couple of books right now on helping men be men so I can counsel better on men being men. I'm trying to find some good ones on helping the ladies be ladies. All right. It's harder for me because I don't have ladies recommending books to me like the men do. They're, hey, I read this great book on being a man. Because I check it out. But ladies, if you know any really good books, I'll take them. Okay. Help you understand how to be the woman Yahweh made you to be. Now, unfortunately, a lot of these books are either written by secular people or they're written by very Christian people, so it comes out kind of messy and mixed. Or very Jewish people, even. Some of the books are very Jewish in their approach. But at least if you had the right approach, you could take the nuggets out and leave the rest behind. You're just looking for those little distinctions that you could apply in your life and leave all the rest on the shelf. All right? I don't think I've ever listened to anything. I say listen because I read books by listening to them. I don't think I've ever listened to one, you know, that everything I heard I thought was awesome, perfect, and I could just use in my life. There was always that one or two things going, eh, you know. Some of them have very few, though. Some of them I thought were really good. But you need to work on you.
Okay, from Bonnie Blue says, a question, or from Leanne, has the saying, spare the rod, spoil the child, been misinterpreted to the physical stick rather than the authority that the rod represents in Scripture?
I would say yes. I mean, this is when we talk about, when we're looking at Psalm 23, when it says, Yahweh is my shepherd, I do not lack. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me by still waters. He turns back my being. He leads me in paths of righteousness. It says, when I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. So this is saying your authority, your, in the vertical structure, your discipline, comfort me. So we've talked about that before. See, people don't always think about that rod and staff correctly, but it really is a submission to authority. Okay, so yes, Leanne is correct in using the analogy that, you know, if you spare the authority, you end up spoiling the child and ruining the child. And by the way, both the rod and the staff in throughout history have been items of authority. Scepters, rods, staffs, okay?
Could it, I guess it, you know, I guess it triggered something for me, was could that also be seeing that the shepherd, you know, the rod, what it was meant to was to keep them safe from the predators and
sure,
stuff, the rod.
Sure, sure.
Would that be what comforts you is knowing that he's there or somebody's there with the rod to keep that away from you, to keep you safe, you know, to
well,
be in
see,
that
safe
would
place. That would be the more standard interpretation for Psalm 23. I'm taking it to a different place for the question that was asked. So yes, that is a standard interpretation that your authority as the shepherd is keeping us safe and comforting me from the wolves and that could be coming to attack the flock, so to speak. So yes, that's but that's more the traditional, I think, understanding there. Okay? I think the children are here.
Yeah, they're standing there in the hallway.
We good?
Yeah, we're good.